taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Welcome, everyday Americans. You've joined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could be here. I'm glad I could be here. Today, we should have a little bit of fun. One of the things I like to do when meeting with groups of people, just to kind of show them that maybe we don't know as much about the Constitution as we think, is I ask them to name the five freedoms protected by the First Amendment. Now, one of the freedoms that is quite frequently, it's one of the most often missed, there's actually two of them, but one of them is the right to petition your government for a redress of grievance. Now, this is a very interesting right because it's one of those things that most people, how do you do that? How do we go about petitioning our government for a redress of grievance? Well, one of the most common ways is in courts of law. We have a judicial branch to hear cases in law and equity involving different, not only crimes, but different suits. And one of the most common ways we petition our government for a redress of a grievance is to take someone to court. But what happens when the courts stop following the law? What happens when the courts no longer serve either the law or justice? What happens to that right when the people in government we go to get a redress of our grievances aren't following the laws? Well, I have an excellent example of that. It's one of those things where it sounds like good news. That is, until you hear the rest of the story, kind of like Paul Harvey would use. So let's look at this case. It happened in California. It's actually happened in the Supreme Court, which sounded like a good deal. But when you got into the details, you found it really was a blow to liberty in California and in the nation. What happens when courts serve neither law nor justice? Can liberty in America survive when courts attempt to be experts in everything except what they're actually delegated to? Now, you may have heard about the California church that recently received an injunction from the Supreme Court against Governor Newsom's tyrannical restrictions against churches in California. However, just as the magician distracts his audience while performing the trick out of sight, this injunction is not a win for liberty in the Golden State. It is a knife in the back to the rights of all Americans. South Bay United Pentecostal Church has petitioned the Supreme Court to hear its case, or issue a writ of certiorari. This case against Gavin Newsom as governor of California. Now, while waiting for the court's decision on the writ, South Bay Pentecostal has asked for injunctive relief from California imposing these restrictions until the court has decided by the case. Now, these restrictions include the state's Tier 1 prohibitions against indoor worship, along with capacity limits and prohibiting singing and chanting. Now, the injunction issued by the court says the state cannot enforce some of the Tier 1 prohibitions, but leaves in place the capacity limits as well as prohibiting singing and chanting. Now, while some in the faith community have hailed this as a win, both the restrictions left in place and the reasons the justices gave for their opinions show that liberty is now in the hands of 9 high priests in black robes, and that the rule of law is dead. The opinions of the justices were all over the map. Justices Thomas and Gorsuch would have granted the injunction in full. Justice Alito would have granted the injunction against the capacity restrictions in indoor singing and chanting, but would have stayed the injunction for 30 days to give the state a chance to demonstrate that these restrictions were the only way to reduce the spread of COVID. Chief Justice Roberts concurred with the partial grant of the injunction and gave a reason for it that I will explore later. Justice Barrett, who was joined by Justice Kavanaugh, wrote the court's opinion. Meanwhile, Justices Kagan, Breyer, and Sotomayor dissented. So let's start with the court's opinion written by Justice Barrett and joined by Justice Kavanaugh. Quote, "The applicants bore the burden of establishing their entitlement to relief from the singing ban. In my view, they did not carry that burden, at least not on this record.
As the case comes to us, it remains unclear whether the singing ban applies across the board and thus constitutes a neutral and generally applicable law, or else favors certain sectors and thus triggers more searching review. Of course, if a chorister can sing in a Hollywood studio but not in her church, California's regulations cannot be viewed as neutral. But the record is uncertain, and the decision below, unfortunately, shed little light on the issue. Once again, we have the Supreme Court ignoring the law and placing their opinions as paramount. While this is not a First Amendment case, the court is using their free exercise jurisprudence as justification for their position. Now, contrary to the so-called experts, since Congress did not pass this law, it is not a violation of the First Amendment. It is, however, a violation of Sections 2 and 4 of Article 1 of California's Constitution. Section 2 reads, quote, "A law may not restrain or abridge liberty of speech or press." And Section 4 reads, "Free exercise and enjoyment of religion without discrimination or preference are guaranteed." Now, this is also a violation of the due process requirements in both the 5th and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. The 5th Amendment reads, quote, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." And the 14th Amendment says, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." The court seems to think it's quite acceptable to abridge freedom of worship and speech, not to mention to deprive people of their liberty and property without due process, as long as it's done equally. According to Justice Barrett, if the state abridges the rights of both churches and Hollywood studios, that's just fine. Now, this position is confirmed by Justice Gorsuch, Thomas, and Alito in their concurrence. Quote, "Often, courts addressing First Amendment free exercise challenges face difficult questions about whether a law reflects, quote, subtle departures from neutrality, religious gerrymandering, or, quote, impermissible targeting of religion." This is from the Church of Lukumi, Baba Ui versus Hialeah. But not here. Since the arrival of COVID-19, California has openly imposed more stringent regulations on religious institutions than on many businesses. The state spreadsheet summarizing its pandemic rules even assigns places of worship their own row. At Tier 1, applicable today in most of the state, California forbids any kind of indoor worship. Meanwhile, the state allows most retail operators to proceed indoors with 25% occupancy and other businesses to operate at 50% occupancy or more. Apparently, California is the only state in the country that has gone so far as to ban all indoor religious services. Again, these justices ignore the language of the First Amendment and apply their own opinions to how freedom of religion should be protected. As long as a state is an equal opportunity infringer of people's rights, the court is more than willing to place their blessing on the tyranny. Gorsuch goes on to show just how corrupt the entire federal judicial system has become. Quote, "When a state so obviously targets religion for differential treatment, our job becomes that much clearer. As the Ninth Circuit recognized, regulations like these violate the First Amendment unless the state can show they are least restrictive means of achieving a compelling government interest." Justice Gorsuch points out that not only has the Supreme Court substituted their own opinion for the supreme law of the land, it appears the inferior courts have as well. Where does the Constitution say that speech, religion, or any right it protects can be infringed if the government claims a compelling interest? The answer is nowhere. And where does the court get the power to place their predecessor's opinion, in the case of Church of Lukumi, Babalu Ai versus Hialeah, above not only the supreme law of the land, but the oaths the justices took upon taking office? The answer is also nowhere. What officials in California are doing is more than simply promise-breaking. This is a criminal act. Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 242, states, quote, "Whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both." Now, these justices are actually accessories after the fact. By depriving the citizens of California their rights under color of law, what they themselves call law, they are just as criminally liable as Gavin Newsom. As if the court's malfeasance were not bad enough, Justice Roberts in his concurrence and Justices Kagan, Bryan, Sotomayor in their dissent go beyond mere sophistry to judicial malpractice. Let's start with Chief Justice Roberts. Quote, "As I explained the last time the court considered this evolving case, federal courts owe significant deference to politically accountable officials with the, quote, background, competence, and expertise to assess public health. While I agree that, in general, courts should defer to elected officials, that should only be when they are exercising the powers delegated to them within the laws and the constitutions of the United States and their state. Why should the courts submit themselves to the opinion of supposed experts in public health? Is it because they have shown themselves to be infallible in their field of expertise? Is it because of the cultish devotion to those we call experts? Or, as Justice Kagan wrote in her dissent, has the court given up even the pretense of exercising judicial power in favor of policymaking? Quote, "Justices of this court are not scientists, nor do we know much about public health policy. Yet today, the court displaces the judgment of experts about how to respond to a raging pandemic. Court justices are not supposed to be scientists or public health experts. They're supposed to be experts in the law, including the supreme law, the Constitution. They're not delegated the power to make judgments based on policy, politics, or pandemics. Their only standard should be the law. Whenever they place something above the law, they are committing malpractice, as defined in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Quote, a dereliction of professional duty or failure to exercise an ordinary degree of professional skill or learning by one, such as a physician, rendering professional services which results in injury, loss, or damage. This alone should be sufficiently bad behavior for a justice to be disqualified from holding office. From Article 3, Section 1, Clause 1 of the Constitution, quote, the judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior. Yet instead, we have the federal judiciary giving their blessing to the infringement on the rights of the people of California, not to mention the rest of the country. And the American people stand for it. This case is another reason why the American people cannot trust the courts with their liberty, as if we needed more evidence of that. We have 7 of the 9 justices on the Supreme Court not only complicit in the destruction of the rights of the people of California, but condoning it as well, at least in part. 3 of those 9 justices are more than happy to have officials in the state of California trash free speech, freedom of religion, liberty, and property rights simply because someone they deem an expert tells them it's okay. Forget rights. Forget the rule of law. This is the exercise of tyrannical power and a foreshadowing of what America will look like in a few years if we, the people, don't stand up and regain control of our public servants. As Abraham Lincoln said, quote, the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert it. If we are the rightful masters both of Congresses and the court, and I believe President Lincoln might have meant legislature since only the national legislature is called Congress, see, then this mess is our fault. Our job is not to overthrow the Constitution, but to return it to its rightful place. Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution reads, this Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of the United States to the contrary, notwithstanding. You may not feel prepared to stand against those in government. This is not surprising, since government-run education system has been indoctrinating generations into servitude for decades. But the cause is not lost. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power. If we are to restore liberty and justice to America, we must take the advice of these 2 presidents. We must again become the masters of our legislatures and courts. We must use the Constitution to overthrow those who pervert it. And if we think we are not enlightened enough, then we must inform our discretion with education. That's the purpose of the Constitution study. The mission that drives our days, to enlighten and inform by education with the truth of the original documents, to empower the citizens of this nation to exercise their powers, restore the government to the consent of the governed, and overthrow those who are perverting not only the Constitution, but liberty and justice as well. If we will not overthrow those who pervert the Constitution at the ballot box, we will doom our children either to live as slaves or to overthrow them with violence. And they will rightly curse us for leaving them the difficult task of restoring liberty because we were unwilling to keep it while the task was yet simple.
So if we petition our government via the courts for a redress of grievance, and the courts don't bother following the law, is our right to petition really become much use? You see, it's not good enough to simply have the opportunity to petition. There must be laws in place, and those laws must be enforced. But what we have here is become common practice. In fact, it's even taught in law schools that the opinion of justices supersede the actual language of the Constitution. That what you read is less important than what someone says it means. Now, courts don't always get it right. They don't always get it wrong. And I'm less concerned about this idea that, you know, the courts have to be perfect. They're staffed with human beings. They're not going to be perfect. But if you can't look at the law and say, no, these rights will not be infringed, and have a reasonable expectation that the courts will find the same, what good are laws? What good are laws if the courts won't follow them? What good is the supreme law if the courts won't follow them? Now, that's not always the case. I have a case here. It came out of, where did it come out of? It came out of Meriwether v. Shawnee State. Reading from the opinion, Nicholas Meriwether is a philosophy professor at Shawnee State University. It's a small public college in Portsmouth, Ohio. That is important. That is a public college, meaning it's funded with public money. Therefore, it falls under the laws and constitution of both the state and of the United States. A little farther we read, at the start of the school year, Shawnee State emailed the faculty informing them that they had to refer to students by their preferred pronouns. Meriwether asked university officials for more details about the new pronoun policy, and the officials confirmed that professors would be disciplined if they refused to use a pronoun that reflects a student's self-asserted gender identity. What if a professor had a moral or religious objections? That didn't matter. The policy applied regardless of the professor's convictions or views on the subject. Now, the court went on to find, this, by the way, is the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, that, quote, traditionally, American universities have been beacons of intellectual diversity and academic freedom. They have prided themselves on being forums where controversial ideas are discussed and debated, and they have tried not to stifle debate by picking sides. But Shawnee State chose a different route. It punished a professor for his speech in a hotly contested issue, and it did so despite the constitutional protections afforded by the First Amendment. The district court dismisses the professor's free speech and free exercise claims. We see things differently and reverse. Now, I'm very happy for this professor because he got the outcome he deserved. Right? The University of Shawnee State was trying to compel speech, a clear violation of free speech. However, and I see this all the time, we again see a federal court saying, well, it's a First Amendment issue. It is not a First Amendment issue. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law establishing a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of the press. Congress didn't make this law. Therefore, it can't be a violation of the First Amendment. However, the Ohio Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, says every citizen may freely speak, write, and publish his sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of the right, and no law shall be passed to restrain or abridge the liberty of speech or of the press. So what the school did, and this again, public school, meaning it's a part of the state government, they passed a rule to compel speech. Clear violation of the freedom of speech. But they went even farther because Professor Meriwether asked, well, what about religious or conscience objections? And they said, too bad. But again, Article 1, Section 7 of the Ohio Constitution reads, all men have a natural and indivisible right to worship Almighty God according to the dictates of their conscience. No person shall be compelled to attend, erect, or support any place of worship or maintain any form of worship against his consent. And no preference shall be given by law to any religious society, nor shall any interference with the rights of conscience be permitted. No religious test shall be required as a qualification for office, nor shall any person be incompetent to be a witness on account of his religious beliefs. So what the school did is they say basically said there's now a religious test to hold a professorship. It's not an elected office, but it is a state-funded office. And they're saying, if you believe in science, in real science, in facts, in evidence, then you are not qualified to be a professor. You will be disciplined. Now, again, I am very happy for Professor Meriwether. I believe that is the court came to the right outcome. But once again, they got there the wrong way. And details matter. Why? Because the right of freedom of worship, what Ohio refers to rights of conscience, education, the necessity of religion and knowledge, is different in the Ohio Constitution than it is in the U.S. Constitution. See, the U.S. Constitution says that you are free to exercise your religion. Ohio goes on to say, not only do you have the right to worship God, but the dictates of your conscience. Freedom of religion is only protected in the U.S. Constitution from infringement by the federal government, by laws from Congress. It left the states, intentionally left the states, to determine how they would protect religious freedom with their own governments. And the fact that the federal courts ignore this means that, once again, we will see, and we have seen, federal ideas imposed on the states illegally in violation of the Constitution. The same way we saw in the California case where the federal court said that you can infringe on someone's rights as long as you do it to both the religious and the secular. See, the right to petition our government is important, and it must be defended, but we must also require that those who act on those petitions do so by following the law, by the consent the government have given to them. The Supreme Court, and in fact, none of the federal courts, should be able to make up rules as they see fit. If this were a First Amendment issue, if the case in California were a First Amendment issue, then it isn't a question of, is it applied equally? Did they infringe on a person's right to speak? Yes. Too bad. Even if they only did it to a certain group, that's the law. When Shawnee State tried to dictate speech, they infringed on the constitutionally protected rights of the professor. In this case, protected by the Constitution of Ohio. And the courts need to follow that. Otherwise, we are no longer a free people. We are not the land of the free. We are not ruled by laws. but by oligarchs in black robes, substituting their opinions for the laws we have put in place. So before we head out to break, I want to remind everybody that you should really, I mean, check out AmericaOutloud.com. It is a great place to find news, to find happenings, to be part of the story, to be involved in what's going on, to share the stories, the articles, the videos, the podcast, this information. When we keep this to ourselves, not only are we denying others important information, we're denying the whole of the skills necessary to remain a free people. So you too can help secure liberty and justice for all in America, to secure the future of the American Republic. And you can do so in many ways, including going to America Out Loud, finding this information and sharing it with friends, with family, with neighbors, wherever you can. And we'll join this discussion again right after the break.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As we celebrate our five-year anniversary, America Out Loud has expanded its mission through a newly designed website with a host of new contributors, all carrying a vibrant message of hope and survival for this country we love. AmericaOutloud.com. Together, we'll secure the future for generations to come.
Welcome back, Everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. We look at what's going on not only from a constitutional standpoint, but from an understanding of our rights, the importance of defending them. And today we're talking about our right to petition our government for a redress of grievance. You know, it's interesting. We think about petitioning. We talk about going to our elected representatives, and that's one way to petition. But it seems to be most of the petitioning happens in courts. But we're back to that question of, well, what happens when courts ignore what the law actually says? I found an article last month on the Daily Caller about two students at public universities in Oregon that are suing the school because they paid for in-person instruction, but were only delivered online instruction. They did not get what they paid for. You know, they paid, quoting from the article, college students pay university for libraries, gyms, campus facilities, activities, in-person access to professor, and other hands-on experiences. But that wasn't delivered in 2020, in much of 2020. So what happens when you pay for something and you don't get what you paid for? Now, this happens to be public universities, and that's one, but does it really matter? If you pay a builder to build you a home and they don't build what you agreed to, you can take them to court and sue, just as these students are suing. If you pay a mechanic to work on your car and they don't do the job, they don't do what they said they would do, you can sue. This is part of that petition. But the question I keep bringing up is, what happens? It's one of the reasons why I focus so much on the courts, because we don't often think of them as part of the government, but they are. Courts are part of government. They are all their employees are government employees. So when you go to the courts and you petition, you have a grievance, like these students who say, listen, we paid for all of these in-person features. We didn't pay an online college. We paid a university expecting to have access to libraries, gyms, professors, to have a hands-on in-person experience. And when the universities either would not or could not deliver, if they did not refund part of the tuition, well, that's fraud. You paid for one thing, they delivered you something. You paid for the Big Mac, you got the quarter pounder with cheese. Now, the difference in price between a Big Mac and a quarter pounder and cheese is pretty small. But if you paid tens of thousands of dollars to be on campus with access to all of these facilities, features and facilities, and you were denied access, you have a cause. You have a case. They committed fraud. Not when they took the money, when they failed to refund large parts of it, because at least that's my opinion. I'm curious to see how this case goes about. But it's a reminder that one of the most common ways to petition our government for a redress or grievance is to sue. Not simply sue the government, not even to sue government, public officials or public entities, but even if you take your neighbor to court, you are petitioning the government to choose to decide between you and another party about this grievance you have. And no, we don't always like the outcome that we get. But if the outcome follows the law, then the problem either is with my case or with the law. And it's not the court's job to fix the law. It's the court's job to apply the law to the case before them. There's another example. There are five farmers that are suing over loan forgiveness. See, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, their farm service agency. Now, let's start out. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is an illegal agency. It's illegal because it is not a power delegated to in the Constitution to the United States to oversee agriculture. Therefore, it's illegal, but that's not the point we're talking about there. Now, they apparently have they've got a loan forgiveness program that was part of the COVID-19 relief package. The American Rescue Plan Act had something like $2 trillion, and part of that was to forgive FSA loans, Farm Service Agency loans, because of the economic impact of COVID-19. Actually, the economic impact of the government's reaction to COVID-19. COVID-19 did not cause these problems, but that's neither here nor there for this case. Now, according to the complaint, the law says those eligible must be Black, African-American, American Indian, or Alaskan Native, Hispanic, or Latino, or Asian American, or Pacific Islanders. We have a racist law. Well, we have several racist laws. This is nothing new. And these farmers who happen to be white are suing because there's a grievance. Why is a farmer less in need of assistance because of the color of their skin? In the complaint or in an interview I read in the Tennessee Star, quote, "The case is a case of loan forgiveness for individuals, but we shouldn't be looking at the color of someone's skin and saying this person needs more help or less help based on the color of their skin." He's correct. He says it's just wrong. It's also just racist. So these farmers in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Ohio, and South Dakota are suing the agriculture secretary. personally, I would like to see every representative, every senator, Secretary Vilsack, the director of the FSA, everybody involved with this removed from office because they're racist. That's my personally what I'd like to see. This is a racist law. This is a racist people. They are denying these farmers the equal protection of the law because of the color of their skin. So they have a cause. But here's the problem. Where are they suing the federal government? The federal government. The federal courts are part of the federal government. So they're going to the federal government, say, please redress this grievance we have with the federal government. Now, the problem you have is this is the problem you have when you accept bribes. And I'm sorry to these farmers, they've accepted bribes. But they were given money, they were loaned money illegally by the federal government. Nothing in the Constitution authorizes Congress to collect taxes, to loan money to individuals, citizens of the United States. So it was an illegal act. And they use that money to coerce and influence farmers as what they will and will not grow and how much they grow. It's a bribe. And if you dance with the devil, you're going to get burned. So while I agree that these farmers have a cause and a case and should go to court, they're in that situation because they went to the federal government and asked them to illegally loan them money. See, these cases are rarely as cut and dried as we'd like for them to believe, or as cut and dried as we're told. There's another interesting one. I saw this. Where did I see this? I saw this in the Epoch Times. And it's a case where the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, is asking the Supreme Court to opine. They say rule. The court doesn't rule. It opines on the question of warrantless searches of travelers' digital devices. Now, this situation is when people are at the U.S. border. So if you've been overseas or out of the country, you come back. The federal government claims they have the right to search your smartphones, your laptops, without a warrant. Now, again, this is illegal. The Fourth Amendment says that you should be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. If there is, now, there is a time issue here, right? Because you're at border control, you're at customs. The question is it reasonable for them to search everybody without any probable cause? Now, again, this is not simply a Democrat versus Republican. This has been growing back in the Trump administration. U.S. border protection and officials carried out over 30,000 electronic device searches in fiscal year 2018. And it's continued to grow since then. Now, according to Homeland Security, the increase in device searches is driven by CBP's mission to protect the American people and enforce the nation's laws in this digital age. Well, how about you enforce the supreme law? That you must have probable cause. You must have a reason to search. It is not reasonable that you simply search people at random. That is not reasonable. That is not protecting the people. That is taking the people's rights. But again, we're petitioning the federal government for a grievance against the federal government. And we've never seen these cases used for political means. Like when 10 House Democrats joined a lawsuit claiming that Trump and Giuliani incited a riot without any real evidence. The only evidence that's been provided that he has done so is manipulated editing of video. The video is out there. Anybody with, you know, half a blind and the willingness to look can find it. For him to say, to go and peaceably petition your representatives. And I also find it interesting that while people are all upset, while these 10 Democrats are so terribly upset about the quote unquote the riot, the breach of security at the Capitol, while the people who have been arrested rot in jail, rioters in Portland and other cities are getting leniency. They're getting let out. They're getting the vice president in the United States, when she was still a candidate, was giving money to bail out rioters. See, that's the problem when you go to a government agent and you ask them to judge against another government agent. These justices must be held to a higher standard. Because if not, then these laws get applied in a political manner. And if you go to the government if you petition your government for a redress of grievance, and these laws are not upheld, they're not structured, they're not used as the basis for that the petition of that grievance, well, then your chances of getting the right outcome, the fair outcome, the just outcome, diminish. Now, there are also plenty of examples of this right to petition being manipulated. I found a Daily Caller article where, I love this one, a man dies in a taco eating contest. Now, forget the question of what's going on, but apparently during a 2019 taco eating contest, according to the Fresno Bee, a California man died choking during the contest. I'm sorry, that is sad. It's sad for the man. It's sad for his family. But the family is now suing the event owners, claiming they neglected to tell the man to make him aware of the risks of participating in the competition. If you don't realize that shoveling tacos into your face as fast as you can could turn out badly, that eating without taking time to properly chew and swallow could lead to problems. You could actually choke if you shovel food into your face as fast as you can. I'm sorry, this sounds like, this doesn't sound like a lawsuit. This sounds like a Darwin Award. Now again, I'm sorry for the man. I'm sorry for his family. But why is it someone else's responsibility to tell you that if you cram food in your face as fast as you can, you could choke? That's what happens when the right to petition your government for redress of grievance is abused. And the Fresno Sports and Events, the owned the place where this competition happened, now has to take the time and the effort and the money to defend themselves against a frivolous lawsuit. Now again, I feel bad for the family. That doesn't mean it was somebody else's fault. It was the man's fault. It was his fault for maybe he was unqualified. Maybe he wasn't capable of actually eating quickly without choking to death. I know it's sad to see someone die in such a foolish manner. But that doesn't mean you have a grievance against the organizers. See, the right to petition a government is abused, and it's abused a lot in America. You have the infamous McDonald's hot coffee case. You have the, I love, you know, you buy a lawnmower and it has all these stupid signs saying, you know, don't reach your hands under there. Don't use it to trim the hedge. Because people have sued. Because they did stupid stuff. See, the right to petition the government for a redress of grievance comes with the responsibility of making sure you actually have a legitimate grievance against the other party. It's one of those where, you know, and I hope in a justice system, if we had, we don't have a justice system, by the way, we have justice system. The judicial branch has little to do, the legal system has little to do with justice nowadays. It has to do with retribution, revenge, punishment, but not justice. So if there were justice in this world, I would think that a court would quickly dismiss this case, or if the case went forward, would put the family legally liable for court costs should they lose. I honestly believe that the best way to do this, and it has its advantages and disadvantages, is for the loser to pay court costs in suits like this. I'm not talking criminal prosecutions. I'm talking suits. So if you sue somebody, you should have to pay reasonable legal costs because you cost them something. And again, it's not just frivolous court cases. I saw an article from The Federalist where one of the jurors in the Chauvin trial, this was an alternate juror, but she said that she had mixed feelings due to the threat of social unrest. Quoting from the article, there was a question on the questionnaire about it, and I put down I did not know. The reason at the time was I did not know whether the outcome was going to be. So I felt like either way you were going to disappoint one group or another. I did not want to go through rioting and destruction again, and I was concerned about people coming to my house if they were not happy with the verdict. One of the most powerful responsibilities an American citizen has is that of sitting on a jury, of holding the future of a human's life in your hands. And it is sad that nowadays, there's, you know, the saying is, you're not tried by a jury of your peers, you're tried by a jury of 12 people who couldn't figure out how to get out of jury duty. Yet what do we see? We see jurors afraid. And by the way, this woman had reason to be afraid because the identities of the jurors were later exposed after the case. If you're petitioning your government for redress of grievance and it goes to a jury trial, if jury intimidation is allowed, what good is your right to trial? Now, whether that jury is influenced by the government or by people who are rioting in a government that won't stop it. She was afraid. She had seen rioting and destruction even before the case went to court. She'd seen rioting destruction even after the officer was arrested and charged. And she had a reasonable fear that if she was moved from an alternate onto the actual jury, that she would be exposed. And if she didn't give the verdict that the crowd wanted, they would come to her house. Now, there are a couple of things that truly, I understand her fear. I was not in that position. I would hope that if I were in her position, I would be willing to do what is right, what is just, and deal with the consequences. I can't say for sure because I haven't been put in that situation. But this tells me a couple of things. One, it tells me society in Minneapolis is broken down. Not because people are rioting, but because the people allow the rioting to continue. Because the people hired public servants that refuse to protect the rights of innocent citizens when these rioters rampage and loot and pillage. And yet they keep getting hired. How many people in Minneapolis stood in Minneapolis City Council, the mayor, anyone, how many of them have stood election? How many of them have faced recall or impeachment? How many? And how many citizens stood up to protect their neighbors when their places were being looted and vandalized, when their livelihoods were being destroyed, when they were being denied their property, and the government sat back and did little, if anything? See, the right to petition is important. But when you are the one sitting on the jury, you have a responsibility. And if this juror didn't feel that she would be protected by her neighbors and by the government that they had hired to protect their rights, society's falling apart. This idea, it really scares me, because what good are laws if courts don't enforce them or jurors don't apply them because they're afraid of what will happen to them? What does it say about society in America, about the American people, that we will not protect those, or we are incapable of protecting those who seek justice, not revenge? Now, there's one other case. There's one other article. This one came from Hot Air, and it gave me an interesting thought, because there are in the House of Representatives, apparently Democrats are proposing changes to Section 230. Now, I agree there are changes that need to be made to Section 230. I personally don't think it should be completely eliminated. But here's the problem. You see, Title 47, United States Code Section 230, which is what everybody's complaining about, says that Section C2, no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected or not. There's the problem. You see, Section 230 is unconstitutional because Congress has violated the First Amendment. How? Well, they just said that you cannot petition the government for a redress of grievance against what they were termed to as a provider, the common term used, because they removed something that was not necessarily illegal, something that was protected. And again, the constitutional protection doesn't deal with private entities. But what they said is you can't sue them. You cannot petition the government for a redress of grievance. So when Facebook violates their license agreement, when they violate their terms of service, when they violate their contracts for advertising, Congress said, no, you cannot petition for a redress of grievance. This actually is a First Amendment violation. Now, again, what I would like to see this change to, very simple. That no provider or user of an interactive service shall be held liable on account of any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access or availability of material that the provider or user considers illegal. That's it. So if there are laws against obscenity, violence, harassment, those are illegal, and you in good faith remove a post that you believe incites a riot. You know, like the videos of Maxine Waters inciting more active participation in the events about the Chauvin trial, which could be interpreted as incitement of riot. Then you cannot be sued. But this blanket protection is unconstitutional. By the way, it's the same with the vaccine. See, if you take this vaccine that government is promoting and you have an adverse reaction and you have a cause to sue, you can't, because Congress has denied you the right to petition your government for redress of grievance because they like the vaccine and they want to protect the providers. See, the right to petition is not simply the right to be heard by your representatives. And when government places its thumb on the scales, both in the legislative and the judicial branches, then your right is meaningless. And justice is denied. So hopefully you found this interesting. Head over to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can read the article that I used at the beginning of the show. You can also find out more about this show, get all the latest podcasts. Just head to AmericaOutloud.com, look under shows, you'll find the Constitution Study. Please be engaged, please be involved, please share, and please come back and join me again next time on the Constitution Study.